An Osho Talk. The great Zen master, Ta Hui. Reflections on the transformation of an intellectual to enlightenment. Number 16.
Before seeking. You have indicated you want me to instruct you by letter in the direct essentials. This very thought of seeking instruction in the direct essentials has already stuck your head into a bowl of glue. Though I shouldn't add another layer of frost to the snow, nevertheless, where there's a question, it shouldn't go unanswered. I ask you to abandon at once all the joy you've ever felt in reading the words of the scriptures yourself, or when being aroused and instructed by others. Be totally without knowledge and understanding, as before, like a three-year-old child. Though the innate consciousness is there, it doesn't operate. Then contemplate what's there before the thought of seeking the direct essentials arises. Observe and observe. As you feel you're losing your grip more and more, and your heart is more and more uneasy, don't give up and slack off. This is the place to cut off the heads of the thousand sages. Students of the path often retreat at this point. If your faith is thoroughgoing, just keep contemplating what's before the thought of seeking instruction in the direct essentials arises. Suddenly you will awaken from your dream, and there won't be any mistake about it.
Is saying few significant things. The first is the consciousness of a three-year-old child lady. It is there. But it does not create thinking. It remains just like a mirror reflecting everything around the child. But the child does not start thinking whether something is good or bad, beautiful or ugly. And why 3 years are mentioned is significant to understand. If you try to go backwards in your memory, you will stop at the age when you were 3. You cannot go beyond that. And the reason is that only after 3 years of age th- thoughts start stirring the consciousness, and impressions start collecting in the memory. Up to the age 3, the child is exactly like a sage, only with one difference, that this innocence is natural and is bound to be lost, because the child is not aware of its beauty, its richness, its splendor. He does not know how much valuable treasure he is going to lose soon as he starts thinking. In fact, he wants to think as quickly as possible, because he is seeing people all around him who can think better. Who are more articulate. Achieve to higher positions, greater prestige, more honor. This whole world supports the process of thinking. For any ambition to be achieved, thinking is absolutely essential. The moment the child becomes aware of the fact that thinking is the most essential thing to be someone in the world, somebody special with name and fame, then he starts learning as quickly as possible and transforming his consciousness and its energy into thoughts, into memory, into imagination. Not knowing that he is losing his most precious nature, his most precious meditative consciousness. It is true, just as Jesus says, unless you are born again, you will not attain the kingdom of God. He does not mean that first you have to die and be born again. He is using only a metaphor. You have to die as a thinker, as a mind, and you have to be reborn only as an innocent consciousness, just like a child. Once a man has completed the whole circle from childhood to the enlightened man, he comes to the same self nature, only with one difference: the child was not aware of it. And the enlightened person is nothing but awareness. He recognizes the value, he enjoys the tremendous bliss of it. His is the ecstasy of the ultimate, and the eternal. The child was just innocent in a negative sense. He was innocent because he was ignorant. And the sage is innocent because he is wise. All ignorance has been dispelled. The child's innocence was not meditative. It was simply non-functioning consciousness. It was just waiting for the right time and age to start functioning. Perhaps the reason is all the animals in the world are born complete. Only man's child is born incomplete. Hence, man's child is the most dependent and helpless than any animal in the world. Any animal's children can survive without the family, without the mother, without the father. They will find some way. But man's child, it is impossible to think that he can find some way to survive on his own accord. And the reason is very strange. Perhaps you have never thought about it. The reason is that man's child is born incomplete. And he has to be born incomplete because the mother cannot carry the child for 3 years more. That means for 4 years continuously. 9 months is the ultimate for the mother to carry the child. More than that, it is impossible. Her womb has not the capacity. So every child is born 3 years before he should have born. So those 3 years he is out of the womb, but almost totally dependent on the womb, on the mother, on the father, on the family. Now this is the womb around him. After 3 years, he starts taking few steps outside the circle of the womb, the family. And for the first time he starts showing indications of being an individual. Below the age 3, children are almost always referring to themselves in the third person. That the baby is hungry, that the baby wants to sleep. That the baby is thirsty. They don't say, I am thirsty. The I has not formed yet. The I will need a little time. Because it is nothing but the center of the mind. the body is formed, mind is still in the process of forming. It takes 3 years for the mind to come to a point from where it starts functioning as an individual. So body is born when the child is 9 months old in the mother's womb, and the mind is born when the child is 3 years out of the womb. That's why we cannot remember backwards more than the age 3. There suddenly a China wall. Those 3 years we have lived, and those 3 years 1001 things must have happened, but they have not left any impact, any footprints on our memory system. The memory system was not ready. The child has every capacity to function as an individual, just he needs a little time for all the mechanism to be ready to function. The sage has lived as a mind, suffered as a mind, has gone through the whole hell of the mind. And has learned the lesson that unless you go beyond the mind, life is going to remain a continuous agony. Mind is agony. Once this experience settles deeply in you, out of your own experience, a new effort, a new beginning, a new birth, the birth of meditation. Just as at the time of 9 months, the body is born, at the age of 3, the mind is born. Somewhere, it depends how intelligently you are watching your experiences, how you are looking at the sources of your misery and suffering. If you are intelligent enough, perhaps by the age 35, you may start feeling a deep urge to go beyond the mind. And by the age 42, these 7 years are the preparation to take the quantum leap. If everything goes naturally, unobstructed and unhindered by the society, by organized religions, then the age 42 will be the third birth, the birth of meditation, a new beginning beyond mind. It does not happen to everyone at 42. Because no society wants it to happen. It is the most dangerous thing as far as the society is concerned. The people should start going beyond the mind. Because going beyond the mind means going beyond the social order, going beyond the organized church, going beyond the scriptures, going beyond all vested interests, going beyond slavery, going beyond any kind of exploitation, oppression, and attaining to your dignity as an authentic consciousness. And this consciousness cannot be imprisoned, it cannot be killed, it cannot be burned. Even nuclear weapons are absolutely impotent as far as this consciousness is concerned. No society wants individuals so powerful in themselves. Every society wants you to remain dependent on it. Your independence is being curtailed in every possible way. And because your independence, your individuality is being curtailed, death comes before meditation comes. Life has been a wastage. Unless you attain to meditation, you have not really lived. I have heard about a man who became aware that he was alive when he died. Suddenly an awakening that, my God, I have been alive, but now it is too late. And perhaps this may not be true just about one man, it may be true about every man who has died without meditation. Just dead people don't tell stories. Just this one man was an exception. There are few exceptional men in the world always. While you are alive, you are not really conscious that how precious is life. In fact, it is one of our traits of the mind. Whatever you have, you don't recognize its value unless you lose it. A great king who has conquered many lands and has accumulated immense wealth. But was very unhappy and miserable. There was not a single moment of joy, bliss. He started asking people that, what is the purpose of all my wealth and all my kingdom? I cannot even sleep. My mind is so full of tensions, worries. There is no space for anything else. Is there someone in my kingdom who can help me? People have heard about a Sufi mystic, and they said, in your kingdom there is a Sufi mystic, a very strange fellow, but he has helped many people, although you have to be a little alert with him, because he is not predictable. He may do anything. But one thing is certain, whatever he does, finally you find that it had a reason. In the beginning it will look absolutely irrational. If you have courage enough, you can go. The king said, do you think me a coward? I have invaded great lands. My whole life has been a life of a warrior. And can a poor Sufi mystic make me afraid? I will go. And I will go alone. No bodyguards, no army, no advisors. But he took with himself a big bag full of diamonds and rubies and emeralds, just to show to the Sufi mystic that this is just only a sample. I have so much money, but it is not helping me at all. First I used to think, when I will have money, I will relax and I will enjoy. But now, money is there and I am living in hell. The Sufi mystic was sitting under a tree. The king went there, got down from his horse, touched the feet of the Sufi mystic and asked him that, can you help me? The Sufi mystic said, what do you want? I will immediately help you. He has heard that that man is strange. Otherwise nobody can tell you, I will immediately help you. He is going to do something. The king was a little afraid. Nobody wants to be immediately helped. He said, there is no hurry, but the Sufi mystic said, just tell me, what do you want? Don't waste my time. You say it, I give it to you, and be finished. The king said, you don't understand, I want peace of mind. And when he was saying peace of mind, the Sufi mystic took the bag of his emeralds and diamonds and rubies and ran away. The king said, "My God, what kind of man is he? Is he a mystic or a thief?" He ran. In his whole life he has never ran. And the village was unknown. Small streets. And the Sufi was perfectly well known. He lived in that village. And the king was shouting that, "Catch hold of that thief." And people were laughing. Because people knew that every day something or other happens. And it was really a laughing matter that the king is huffing and puffing and shouting that, "Catch hold, why you are just laughing?" And running still because his whole money, that old fellow is taking away and he is going so fast. And he gave him a good round of the whole village, made the whole village aware that the mystic is ahead and the king is following, perspiring. And finally he reached to the same tree, sat there, waited for the king to come. The king came, very tired, perspiring. And the mystic gave him the bag. He took the bag, put it on his chest and said, "My God." The Sufi said, "Have you got some peace of mind?" "Had not I told you, I will give you immediately." He said, "Strange is your way, but it is true, I am feeling very peaceful. I have never felt in my life. And the trouble is that this money was always with me. And I have never felt so much happy as I am feeling now." The Sufi said, "I have solved your problem. Your problem is you have got everything. You need some distance. You need to lose it. Only then you will understand what you had. And this is not only true about your money. This is more true about your life itself. Because you have had it, you have started taking it for granted. It is too obvious. It is yours. You are not at all concerned that tomorrow it may not be yours. Or even the next second. The day you become aware that death will destroy all opportunities for growth, life is a great opportunity to grow. But rather than growing, you have been simply accumulating junk, which all will be taken away. People only grow old, but to be growing old is not growing up. Very few people grow up. Growing old is a natural thing. Every animal does it. There is nothing special about it. It is horizontal. Growing up is vertical. Only very few people grow up. And meditation is the only path that moves vertically. Mind moves horizontally. Ta Hui is making few very important statements. The first sutra, you have indicated you want me to instruct you by letter in the direct essentials. This very thought of seeking instruction in the direct essentials has already stuck your head into a bowl of glue. It seems he is getting free from his own intellectual jargon. He is becoming aware of something more than the mind. He is condemning the very idea of getting instruction through somebody else, and that too through a letter. Through words, through language. First, from somebody else. Second, through language. Though I should not add another layer of frost to the snow, because whatever I will say will become more knowledge to you. It will simply strengthen the power of your mind. And what is needed is weakening the power of the mind so that you can go beyond it without hindered by it. This has been the problem of all the enlightened people. And Ta Hui is right when he says, nevertheless, where there is a question, it should not go unanswered. Why it should not go unanswered? Because every question, if answered by somebody who is not just knowledgeable, can be turned into a quest. The right answer does not mean what it means in schools and colleges and universities. The right answer is that which turns your question into a quest. The right answer does not mean the answer that is given in the books, and you are repeating it just like a parrot. As far as the enlightenment is concerned, the right answer has nothing to do with your question. It simply uses your energy involved in the question and turns it into a quest. It becomes your thirst. That's why Ta Hui is right that where there is a question, it should not go unanswered. The opportunity should not be missed to change the question into a quest. Your answer has to be such that the question is not solved, but rather it deepens into a quest. It becomes less intellectual and more existential. A question about water should be turned by your answer into a deep thirst. All the awakened people down the ages had been answering only for this purpose, not that they are giving you the right answers. There are no right answers. Your questions are being used to provoke in you a search, a deep longing. If the answer can do that, it is the right answer. I ask you to abandon at once all the joy you have ever felt in reading the words of the scriptures yourself, or when being aroused and instructed by others. He is turning towards his own being. He is not using quotations anymore. He is saying things which just few sutras ahead he himself was doing. Now he is saying things against them. He is saying, I ask you to abandon at once all the joy you have ever felt in reading the words of the scriptures yourself, or when being aroused and instructed by others. Why? The awakened people have always been against the scriptures. Not that the scriptures are wrong. This is a great misunderstanding all around the world. The people who have awakened are against the scriptures for a totally different reason than people understand. They think they are against scriptures because scriptures are wrong. They are against scriptures because if you get lost into the words of scriptures, you will never come to know your own truth. The scriptures may be right. That is not the point. Perhaps they are right. But they are not right for you. They were right only for those people who had experienced and have expressed something out of their experience. But to you, they are just dead words. And if you become too much interested in collecting dead corpses around yourself, you will be soon drowned in the dead words. That's what happens to all the scholars. Their great effort simply becomes a suicide. They work hard, but their gain is nothing. Scriptures may have come from people who were awakened. But the moment somebody says, it is no more the same as his own experience. And when it is written, it goes even far away. That's why no enlightened person in the whole world has written anything by his own hand. They have spoken. Because the spoken word and the written word have qualitative differences. The spoken word has a warmth. The written word is absolutely cold, ice cold. The spoken word as the heartbeat of the master. The spoken word is not just a word. It is still breathing when it reaches to you. It has still some flavor. It is coming from a source of immense joy and light. It is bound to carry something of that fragrance, some radiation from that light, some vibe which may not be visible, but will stir your being. To listen to a master is one thing. And to read just the same words is totally different. Because the living presence of the master is no more behind the world. You can't see those eyes. You can't see those gestures. You can't see in those words the same authority. You can't feel those same silent gaps. The presence of the master, his charisma, his energy is missing in the written word. Written word is absolutely dead. No master has ever written except Lao Tzu, and that to under imperial pressure. His whole life he refused to write. And in the end he was going to leave China towards the Himalayas for his ultimate rest. The emperor of China ordered the armies on the boundary that if Lao Tzu passes through that area, because that was the only gate towards Himalayas, he is bound to pass from there, imprison him. Take good care of him. But make it clear to him he cannot go out of China unless he writes his experiences. And this is an order from the emperor. Poor Lao Tzu was not aware what is going on. He simply went to the place where it was easiest to move out of China. He was caught immediately. There was an army waiting. With respectful, with great honor, they asked him that this is the imperial order. Forgive us, we don't want to hinder you. Just to fulfill the order. Otherwise, we will not be able to allow you to go out of China. And we have made a special guest house for you. According to the orders from the emperor, every comfort, luxury, you stay and you write whatever you have experienced. What is the truth that you have realized that has attracted so many people? Under such circumstances, because he wanted quickly to reach to the Himalayas, his death was coming closer, and he wanted to die in the Himalayas. Himalayas have an eternal silence, a peace that you cannot find anywhere else. He wrote Tao Te King, a small booklet, but that is the only exception in the whole history when an enlightened man has written anything. But the beginning of the book is, truth cannot be written. So remember, whatever I am writing is not true. I will try my best to be as close to truth as possible, but approximate truth is not truth. So he has made the beginning of his book with the statement that whatever is written goes far away from the living experience. That is the reason why all the awakened people have been against the scriptures. But the ordinary masses have always misunderstood them. If I say anything against the Vedas, Hindus are angry. If I say anything against the Bible, Christians are angry. But I am not against the Vedas or against the Bible. I am against your being lost in those dead words. Once they were alive, but now the people whose presence was needed to give them life, to keep their flame burning, themselves have disappeared into the universal consciousness. Just their footprints are left on the sand of time. You can call them holy footprints. That does not make any sense. You can worship them. You can have photographs of them. You can hang those photographs. You can do all kinds of stupid things, which are being done in all churches, all mosques, all temples, all synagogues. And the man who knows has to say something against all that is going on. Tahui is right when he says, stop having any joy in scriptures. That is dangerous. It is poisonous. Be totally without knowledge and understanding as before, like a 3-year-old child. Though the innate consciousness is there, it does not operate. Be born again as a child. The greatest achievement in life is if in your old age you can again become a child. You have completed the circle. You have come back home. You have rediscovered your self nature. Every child comes with it, but first he has to lose it. Only then he will recognize that what he has lost in gaining money, power, respectability, which are of no use at all. He has lost himself. He has sold himself in the marketplace. For few pieces of gold. If one recognizes one stops accumulating knowledge and one starts dropping all so-called knowledge, a simple criterion has to be used. Whatever is not your experience is not true. It may be the experience of Gautam Buddha. It may be the experience of Jesus. It may be the experience of Lao Tzu. But it is not your experience. And if Buddha eats, his hunger disappears, not your hunger. If Buddha finds the truth, his darkness disappears, not your darkness. Nobody can help anybody else. I don't think it as a calamity. I think it as one of the greatest privileges of man. That at least in this world there is one thing which is absolutely yours. Neither anybody can give it to you, nor anybody can take it away from you. It cannot be stolen. There is no way to destroy it, but you have to find it yourself. There is no shortcut. to it. And there is no cheap way to find it. You will have to go into your own aloneness, into your own subjectivity, into the very center of your being where nothing moves and everything is absolutely still. In that stillness, you will find again your last childhood. And to find it again, is such a celebration. Every cell of your being starts dancing. Tahui is saying, if you can reach to the same state of consciousness when it was there but not operating, then contemplate what is there before the thought of asking the direct essential arises. Observe and observe. He is giving you an essential method of meditation. Any thought arises in your mind. Rather than finding out the answer, try to find out from where it arises. And what was the situation of your inner being when it has not arisen? You will suddenly find again and again the same innocence, the same childhood consciousness, the same golden period. Every thought, if you observe, will lead you to the same stage. Then thought is not your enemy. Then mind is not your enemy. On the contrary, it becomes an object of observation. Observe and observe. Just watch. A thought arises and a thought disappears. It arises from nowhere. Before it arises, there is absolute silence, and then it disappears into silence again, into nothingness. In the beginning is nothingness, in the end is nothingness. And this nothingness is your pure consciousness. The Bible says, in the beginning there was word. And God was with the Word. And God was the Word. It is possible that in the beginning there was sound but not word, because word means a meaningful sound. Who will give meaning to it? And in fact, if you look scientifically, you go into the forest and you see the sound of running water in a waterfall. There is no meaning in it, but there is sound. But you will be surprised to know that the scientific understanding is the sound is there only because you are there. Without your ears, there is no sound. So it will be very surprising to you when there is nobody around the waterfall, there is no sound. Because sound needs ears. In the same way, here is light. That moment we all are gone, there is no light, because the light needs eyes. Without eyes, there is no light. When you move out of your room, do you think things remain the same? The blue remains blue and the red remains red? Just forget all that is nonsense. The moment you go out of the room, all the colors disappear. It is a very magical world. You close the room, all colors are gone, because colors need eyes. Without an eye, no color can exist. And just look from the keyhole, they come back. And this miracle is happening every day. In fact, even if you are sitting in your room and you close your eyes, all the colors disappear. Don't try just to see by the corner of your eye whether they have disappeared or they are still there. They will come back immediately. To say that there was word is absolutely wrong in the beginning. Sound would have been better, but that too is not right. Silence would be even more better than sound, but silence also needs ears, just as sound needs ears. Do you think when you are absent from your room, there is silence? It is not possible. There is no noise, that is true. But there is no silence either. Noise and silence both are experiences of the ears. So what was in the beginning? No silence, no sound, no word. Gautam Buddha and his approach seems to be far more scientific, that there was only nothingness. And that nothingness is our very being. because we have come out of that nothingness, and we will disappear into that nothingness one day. So make friendship with that nothingness, because it is going to be your eternal home. And to make friends with nothingness is all that is meant by meditation. And as you observe your thoughts, slowly, slowly, they disappear. And only a pure nothingness surrounds you. You have come to the beginning of the world, which is also the end of the world. You have come to the source and you have come to the goal. In this stage, only your awareness is the truth. That's why Buddha and all those people who have awakened to the ultimate truth don't recognize the hypothesis of God, because in that nothingness they don't find any God. Unless you want to call nothingness as God, then there is no problem. But it will give a very wrong understanding about nothingness. I myself have come to the conclusion that rather saying there was no God, because it will unnecessarily hurt people and will not help in any way, it is better to say there was godliness, just a quality. That nothingness was not empty, that nothingness was full, over full. It was full of consciousness, and consciousness is the divine quality. You can call it godliness. And the whole existence is made of the same stuff. You can call it nothingness, you can call it godliness. It is only a question whether you prefer a negative description or you prefer a positive description. But both the words mean the same thing. As you feel, says Tahui, you are losing your grip more and more, and your heart is more and more uneasy. When you will observe your thoughts and this nothingness will start surrounding you, there is always a possibility that your heart will start sinking. You may become afraid, scared. Don't be scared and don't feel uneasy. It is happening only because of your old habit. You have never experienced nothingness. Otherwise, there is nothing more blissful. There is nothing more peaceful. There is nothing more alive Don't give up and slack off. This is the place to cut off the heads of thousand seasons. This refers to a certain statement of Gautama Buddha. He used to say to his disciples, if I meet you on the way, don't hesitate. Immediately cut my head. Most probably I will meet you. Because the disciples have loved so much and the Master has showered so much love on them, then when they will be silent, there is every possibility. The mind will play its last trick. And the last trick will be to bring the Master himself. And that will become the barrier to see the nothingness. Gautama Buddha is absolutely right that cut my head immediately because I am not there. Just mind is playing the last game. The last resort. It happened in Ramakrishna's life. Because he was a worshipper of Mother Goddess Kali. He came in contact with an enlightened wanderer monk, Totapuri. And Totapuri said to him that although you have progressed too much, but you are stuck. You are stuck with this goddess. Because there is no goddess, nothing. It is just your imagination. Ramakrishna was already worshipped by thousands of people. But when Totapuri said this to him, he immediately recognized that the man is right. He said to Totapuri, help me, because when I close my eyes, everything disappears. Only Mother Goddess remains, so beautiful, so radiant, that I forget completely that I have to enter into nothingness. She is so beautiful and so charming that I get lost into her beauty and into her energy, and when I wake up, I cry because I wanted to go beyond her, but she seems to surround me like a boundary of a jail from everywhere. Totapuri said, you sit before me and just look at this piece of glass. Ramakrishna said, what is the purpose of that piece of glass? Totapuri said, I will watch your face. Because I know, I have watched you. When you see Mother Goddess inside yourself, your face becomes so beautiful, so graceful, that I will know immediately that you have come to encounter your illusion, that you have been conditioning yourself for years. I will immediately cut just on your forehead with this piece of glass, and as I cut and blood starts flowing, you also take courage and cut the head of the mother goddess. Ramakrishna said, it is very difficult. And moreover, from where I am going to get the sword? Totapuri laughed and he said, if you can imagine mother goddess, can't you imagine a sword? It is all imagination. And if you miss, I am not going to stay here anymore. So don't miss this chance. Otherwise, in this life, perhaps you will not meet another Totapuri. Ramakrishna closed his eyes, and as he became radiant, joyful, and his face started showing that he is seeing something tremendously beautiful, Totapuri cut exactly what in the East is called the third eye. From the top of his forehead he came down up to his nose, cutting the whole skin, blood flowing, and Ramakrishna gathered courage, pulled out his sword. He could not believe that from where this sword has come. And he cut the head. It was very difficult because he has loved this mother for years. He has been dancing, singing, chanting. He was creating the illusion. Otherwise there are no mother goddesses, no father gods, except man's imagination, except man's childish fixation on mothers and fathers. He cut the head and he could not believe the mother fell in two parts, head on this side and the body on this side, and as if a door opened, a door to nothingness, to infinity. For 6 days he remained in that state. After 6 days he opened his eyes with tears in his eyes, and the first words he spoke to Totapuri were, the last barrier has fallen. I am grateful to you. You have been of tremendous compassion. That was the last day. After that, he never went into the temple of Mother Goddess. After that, he never mentioned the name of Mother Goddess. And after that, he was a totally different man. So silent, so peaceful, so joyous, as if there is not a single worry in the world. He lived almost 3 years after this experience, and those 3 years are the most precious years. People who have sat by his side, and he was not very ancient, he existed just in the past century. In the last years of the past century, so just 100 years before he was here, I have come across people in Bengal whose grandfathers have sat with Ramakrishna. And they still remember their grandfathers telling them about the man. Those 3 years, he was not speaking. Once in a while he will tell a small story. Once in a while he will dance. But otherwise he will sit silently with hundreds of disciples, all enjoying and sharing the ultimate nothingness. Students of the path often retreat at this point. Those who are beginners are naturally afraid when they come across nothingness. Naturally, the fear arises as if they are drowning. As if this nothingness is going to swallow them. It is true, it will swallow, but only that which you are not, only your false personality will disappear. But your authentic being will remain in its crystal clear purity. There is no need to fear. The master is needed on such stages. This is the last stage where the master is needed. Not to let you retreat, but to give you a good push. Just a little encouragement that don't be worried. I have also been through the same stage. There is nothing to be feared. It is not death. This nothingness is not death. This nothingness is purest life. If your faith is thoroughgoing, just keep contemplating what is before the thought of seeking instruction in the direct essentials arises. Suddenly you will awaken from your dream and there won't be any mistake about it. allow this nothingness to take possession of you. And all your dreams have disappeared. Your spiritual sleep cannot remain anymore. I have to explain something to you at this point. For thousands of years it has been thought that dreams are a kind of disturbance to sleep. But the latest findings say just the opposite. Dreams are not disturbances in your sleep. They are very protective and helpful to your sleep. They prevent your sleep from being broken. For example, you feel hungry and you are asleep, and a dream arises that you are going into the kitchen and you are opening the fridge and you are taking a good share of sweets or ice cream or whatsoever you like, because in dream there is no question, whatsoever you like. The dream is very generous. And as much you like, because dreams don't listen to doctors. And this way, the dream has protected your sleep. Otherwise, the hunger would have disturbed your sleep. Now you feel you have taken enough, and the sleep continues. Recent researches about dream and sleep have made many things clear. Out of 8 hours, you will not be thinking that you are dreaming almost 6 hours. Only 2 hours you are asleep. That too not in a single piece for 2 hours. Few minutes here, few minutes there. In 6 hours dreams, just few fragments here and there, you are asleep. And there has been done an experiment in many psychological labs that a person was disturbed whenever he was dreaming. It is very easy to know when a person is dreaming. If you are sitting by the side of your wife or your husband or your friend, the moment you see his eyes start moving under the eyelids, he is starting dreaming. So it is very easy to know when he is dreaming and when he is not dreaming. Because when he dreams, then naturally he is seeing scenes almost like a film, and his eyes start moving. When he is asleep, his eyes don't move. The experiments have been done that whenever a person will dream, they will wake him up. They will disturb his dream. They will allow him to sleep, but they will not allow him to dream. And they were surprised that although he has slept 2-3 hours, that was the time at the most that he was going to sleep. But he is very tired, exhausted. He is not rejuvenated. In the morning he does not feel like getting up. They could not believe it. They were thinking that his dreams being disturbed, his sleep has been completely there. The old idea has been that the sleep rejuvenates you, revitalizes you. Then they did another experiment. They will disturb the person when he was asleep, and they will not let him sleep. He can dream as much as he wants. Dreaming time, they will leave him undisturbed. And the strange conclusion is that the man in the morning comes more fresh than he had ever been. He has not slept at all. The whole night he has been in a movie house. And he is not tired. So two things have become clear. One, that dreams are not disturbing the sleep, but they are protective and guarding it. Second, dreams are more necessary for your health than your sleep, because dreams are throwing out all the garbage that you collect the whole day. They clean your whole being. 6 hours spring cleaning. So in the morning you feel fresh. Why I am telling you about this experiment? Because the same applies to the spiritual sleep. The moment your dreams disappear in meditation, thoughts, images, these are all dreams. When they all disappear, then your spiritual sleep cannot remain without them. They were protecting it. So just as on the ordinary mental level it is true, it is true on the spiritual level too, exactly in the same way. Once dreams have disappeared, that means meditation has come to maturity. And after the dreams are gone, suddenly you will feel a new awakening You have been waking up every morning. But once you wake up from your spiritual sleep, then you will see the difference. Why? In the East, we have been dividing 4 stages. First stage is called so-called waking. Second stage, dreaming. Third stage is sleep. And the fourth stage, real awakening. The so-called waking, we all know. Every morning we wake up. Enlightened being knows the real awakening. It has some quality of our awakening, but our awakening is very small, very thin layer. The awakening of a Gautam Buddha is total. In that total awakening, there is a luminous awareness surrounded by a positive nothingness. It is not empty, it is overfull. So rather than to say nothingness, Gautam Buddha used to say no-thingness. Things have disappeared. And what has remained is inexpressible. We try to express it as blissfulness, as ecstasy, as eternal joy. But these are far away echoes of the real thing. They don't represent exactly. There is no way. In our language, we cannot translate the experience of the ultimate awakening. But few hints can be given. Tahui's suggestions to the young seeker are all significant. Faith is thoroughgoing, has to be thoroughgoing. But one has to remember, it is not the faith in a church, it is not the faith in a holy scripture. It is simply faith in yourself. And the function of the master is not to create faith in himself, but to create faith in yourself. An authentic master makes you more and more trusting in your own individuality, in your own potential, in your own courage, in your own ultimate possibility of a quantum leap from mind to no mind. This can be the criterion to judge if somebody wants you to have faith in him. He is a fraud. And if somebody helps you to have faith in yourself, he is a friend. And a true master is a friend. He is not superior. He is not holier than thou. He is just a friend. He has so much to share. He wants many friends because his sources are abundant, but his whole effort is to help you to stand on your own legs. He does not create faith in God, faith in any savior, faith in any priest, faith in any messenger, faith in any scripture. He creates faith in yourself. And anybody who helps to create faith in yourself obviously cannot be a fraud, because he cannot exploit you. Exploitation is possible only if he creates faith in himself. If he asks, surrender to me, have faith in me, I will deliver you, I will redeem you, I am the savior, I am the shepherd and you are just sheep. If something like this is being told to you, beware of such shepherds. They are simply frauds exploiting your helplessness, exploiting your ignorance. The friend will help you to save yourself, to become a savior of yourself. The last words of Gautam Buddha were, be a light unto yourself. Those are the most pregnant words ever uttered by any man. Thank you.